Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lin, Pete Musto, Anne Ball, Marcia James, and Anna Mateo. First, here is Brian Lin.
Recent stories about American presidential candidates have raised questions about how much candidates should say about their medical history while running for office. In the United States, no law requires presidential candidates or presidents to release medical records or information about their health to the public. But one recent study of likely voters found that 86% of those questioned said a candidate's health is important to their vote. Most presidential candidates are over age 50, but this issue affects somewhat younger candidates, too. John F. Kennedy was the youngest person to be elected U.S. president. He was 43 years old when he won the election of 1960. Kennedy had Addison's disease and back pain that were treated with drugs before he was elected. This information was not released to the public. In 1932, Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected president with a clear disability. He had polio. Few photographs survived of Roosevelt sitting in his wheelchair. Late in his presidency, he also suffered from heart disease. The public never heard about his heart problems until Roosevelt died, just months into his fourth term in office. The U.S. Constitution is clear that once a president has died, the vice president takes office. But questions have arisen throughout American history about what happens when a president is unable to carry out his or her duties, like when under anesthesia, or the president could be in a coma and unable to communicate. Following Kennedy's death, Congress passed the 25th Amendment to the Constitution. That amendment states, in part, that when a president is incapacitated, the vice president and members of the president's cabinet can act. They can make a formal declaration to the leaders of the Senate and House that the president is unable to carry out his duties. The vice president then immediately can act for the president. But the amendment has never been used, even when former President Ronald Reagan was shot in 1981. President Barack Obama has released reports of his physical examinations periodically throughout his presidency and once during his campaign. He was not legally required to do so. This move has become a tradition for presidents in the years since the passing of the 25th Amendment. In 2008, Obama defeated U.S. Senator John McCain for the presidency. During the election campaign, McCain released more than 1,000 pages of his medical records to the public. McCain was 72 years old at the time. I'm Brian Lin.
This week, presidential candidate Hillary Clinton made news, not for what she said, but for her health. Her political campaign announced that Clinton had pneumonia after she appeared weak at a public event in New York City. The former Secretary of State left the event suddenly. A video showed several people helping her into a waiting vehicle. So, what is pneumonia? And how does it spread? Simply stated, pneumonia is an infection of the lungs. It is treatable and preventable. However, pneumonia is the leading cause of death among children under 5. And it was still responsible for nearly 1 million deaths in 2015. That information comes from the World Health Organization. Pneumonia most often results from a bacteria called Streptococcus pneumoniae. But viruses like influenza and even fungi can cause pneumonia. Bacterial pneumonia is the most common kind of the disease. Pneumonia can often result from the flu. Once the disease gets into a person's lungs, the air sacs, or alveoli, that take in oxygen, fill up with fluid. This makes breathing difficult and painful. It can limit the amount of oxygen a person takes into their body with each breath. It also causes coughing and an increase in body temperature. This makes the person feel cold. Those most at risk are the very young, the older adults over the age of 65, and anyone with a weak immune system. The signs of pneumonia look like those of the flu and the common cold, so it is best to seek out trained medical help. The American Lung Association says a doctor will listen to your lungs for crackling, bubbling, and rumbling sounds while you breathe. A follow-up chest X-ray test may also be necessary. For viral pneumonia, doctors can tell the patient to take antiviral medication. The disease can often last 1 to 3 weeks in people who are generally healthy. For people who get bacterial pneumonia, treatment for mild cases can include antibiotics, rest, and fluids. The recovery time is similar to that for viral pneumonia. Mycoplasma pneumoniae is another bacterial form of the disease. It is known as walking pneumonia. It is generally mild, but a full recovery may take an extended period of time, especially for the young, unhealthy, and older adults. Preventing pneumonia requires the same steps used to prevent colds and the flu. The American Lung Association states that pneumonia is often spread through coughing or even breathing. The group warns that people who don't show signs of pneumonia can also spread the disease. It urges Americans to get a flu vaccination every year. In addition, children younger than 5 and adults 65 and older should get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia. The American Lung Association also urges people to wash your hands early and often, don't smoke, and get plenty of rest and exercise. ¶¶
The United States is home to about 3.5 million Muslims. About one-third of them are African Americans, who have long supported Democrats. But most Muslims in the U.S. are immigrants. They have come from many countries, and most of them are conservative. But surveys show that the children and grandchildren of Muslim immigrants are less conservative than their parents. Many second and third generation Muslims support Democrats and hold beliefs that are different from those of the Republican leadership.
In 2011, the Pew Research Center reported that 70% of Muslims in the U.S. describe themselves as Democrats or agreeing with Democratic policies. Only 11% said they were Republicans or supported Republican policies. Experts believe the numbers have not changed since the study was completed. Robert McCaw says another survey found 55% of Muslim Americans called themselves moderate and 26% claimed to be liberals. Some experts thought conservative Muslims and Republicans shared common positions on such issues as homosexuality and the duties of government. But the 2011 Pew survey found that Muslim Americans have grown considerably more accepting of homosexuality since 2007. It found that 68% of Muslim Americans wanted a larger government providing more services than a smaller government providing fewer services.
McCaw says, not only do they switch parties and now are voting Democratic, but they're also adopting some of the policies and positions and ethics of the Democratic Party. Traditionally, a number of immigrants from the Middle East or South Asia are more socially conservative, and there was a place for them in the Republican Party. But I think as people grow and develop in America, they definitely change their views and preferences over time. And more importantly, their children grow up here and they might be voting different than their parents previously had. Esposito says that Republicans and Muslims were never really natural allies. He says culturally and politically, most Muslims are more like Democrats. He notes that surveys show many more Republicans than Democrats have negative beliefs about Islam and Muslims.
The 2011 Pew Research Center survey also found that only 15% of Muslims believe the Republican Party is friendly toward their community. That is compared to 48% of those asked who see it as unfriendly. The center said that 46% of Muslims found the Democratic Party friendly toward them, and only 7% said it was unfriendly. Sajid Tarar is a Muslim American activist. He now campaigns for Republican candidate Donald Trump. He does not agree that most Muslims feel at home in the Democratic Party. But studies show that the Muslim American move away from the Republican Party has sped up following comments from Republican candidates, including Trump. The businessman angered many Muslims when he said, "Islam hates us." He also suggested that all Muslims should be banned from entering the country. Historically, few Muslim Americans vote. But the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations has launched a campaign to register 1 million new voters. That would represent an increase of nearly 300,000 since the 2012 presidential election.
Some political observers believe many Muslim Americans will vote this year. Esposito predicts that as many as 80% of them will vote for Clinton. While there are relatively few Muslim American voters, there are large Muslim communities in Florida, Ohio, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. These are also important states in the presidential election. Muslim activists say the Muslim American vote could decide who will win in these so-called swing states. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Ann Ball.
Jennifer Webb McCray always knew what she wanted to be when she grew up.
I really never wanted to be anything else when I grew up. I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. And that was because my family kind of put that notion in my head. They used to tease me and say that I argued every point, so I should grow up and be a lawyer.
But neither Webb McCray nor her family knew how far she would go. All in her home state of New Jersey.
I am the Cumberland County Prosecutor, which means that I am the Chief Law Enforcement Officer for the County of Cumberland. There are 21 county prosecutors throughout the state. I happen to be the first African American and first female prosecutor of Cumberland County.
Webb McCray was raised in Vineland, New Jersey. She received her law degree just 40 minutes away from home, from Camden School of Law at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Early on, Webb McCray was interested in family law. She clerked for a judge involved in that field. He became a lifelong mentor. However, she found she had a passion for criminal law when she worked with the juvenile justice system.
I was fortunate enough to get a job very quickly at the Office of the Public Defender representing juvenile defendants. So it was interesting because it gave me a passion for criminal justice, but it also kind of suited that social work element of me to want to do justice and help serve the whole person and kind of started me on my way in the criminal justice world.
Webb McCray says her responsibilities as chief prosecutor of Cumberland County are complex.
There are a lot of hard issues that you face when you have to make decisions that affect people's lives in the criminal justice system. However, with some of the national issues that are going on in our country with, Ferguson, with mass incarceration, with a lack of confidence in law enforcement. It's been a challenge, being the first African-American prosecutor.
Sometimes the challenges might feel personal.
Also being a mother of an African-American boy to, reconcile that, I have a role to play in the system and how to do that responsibly. One of the things that we work really hard on and I have hopefully brought to the forefront is that I understand that my primary responsibility here is to prosecute people who break the law in Cumberland County as well as protect the citizens of this great county.
There are many ways to serve that purpose, however. Webb McCrae says she works to help people make good choices, especially when they are young. She recognizes the power of peer pressure that children face. She notes the strong no-snitching culture among young people that can block needed intervention. To battle this, Webb McCrae launched an annual back-to-school initiative. After just 6 years in existence, the program now involves 40 schools. McCrae and her office staff attend over 30 back-to-school events each year. They share information about programs that help keep kids safe. Earlier this year, Webb McCrae also launched a community engagement series.
With Ferguson, with police-involved shootings, it's important that we dialogue the communities in times of rest and when things are calm so that we can capitalize on those relationships when we have unrest or we have crisis that we all have to deal with together.
Prosecutor Webb McCrae hopes her example will inspire girls in Cumberland County.
I'm passionate about what I do. I'm proud to be a career woman. I'm proud to be a role model for other young women who are, you know, embarking to be decision makers. And I'm passionate about doing justice every day.
Jennifer Webb McCrae plans to continue to grow in her career. She hopes to become a judge someday. Her belief and community involvement, public service, and justice will continue.
I believe that, you know, everyone is a stakeholder in our community, and everyone has a right and a vested interest to make sure that the justice system is fair and just and equitable for everyone. Our system is not perfect. Our justice system across the country certainly isn't perfect, but I'm passionate about doing my little part to make it better. I believe in action and moving the ball forward.
I'm Marcia James.
An Asian chili sauce is winning over taste buds all over the United States. Sriracha sauce now flavors many American-made products, from popcorn to candy to beer. There are cookbooks explaining how to use the popular hot sauce. You can buy clothing decorated with the famous Sriracha rooster. Songs have been written about the hot sauce. There is even a 2013 documentary film, Sriracha, about the history of the spicy condiment. Sales of Sriracha are greater than $80 million each year. This success has made Sriracha, named after a city on Thailand's coast, a household name in America. The popularity of Sriracha sauce is even more amazing considering the company that makes the sauce has never advertised. The man who created Sriracha sauce is David Tran. He is an ethnic Chinese from Vietnam who immigrated to California. His sauce is made with red jalapeno peppers, grown only on a farm in Southern California. Tran's Sriracha sauce is hot on the tail of, meaning right behind, America's traditional best-selling spicy sauce, Tabasco. Tabasco has been sold for nearly 150 years. It is a Cajun-style pepper sauce that has more vinegar and is spicier than trans sriracha sauce. The hotness or spiciness of a sauce can be measured with something called the Scoville scale. The American Chemical Society tests and rates hot peppers. Tabasco is not only hotter, but also 5 times more expensive than trans sriracha sauce. The Louisiana-based company that makes Tabasco is now making its own premium sriracha sauce. In fact, large and small companies in the U.S. are using the sriracha name on their own sauces. When David Tran made the sauce, he did not copyright the sriracha name. David Tran was a major in the South Vietnamese Army. He created his first hot sauce in 1975. That year, his country fell to the communist North. 5 years later, he began hand-bottling his new sauce for restaurants in the Chinatown area of Los Angeles, California. Sriracha is a variation of the spelling of the Thai town of Sriracha. It is a seaside community on the east coast of the Gulf of Thailand, and it is famous for its sauce. Thai people can be confused and dissatisfied when they learn that a sauce with the name Sriracha is made 13,000 kilometers away in the United States. When he saw the American sauce in the red bottle with a white rooster on it, one government officer in the city of Sriracha said, "What do you mean it's from America? Its name is Sriracha." A Thai food writer in Thailand agreed. She said, "Because of the name, it's obvious that it should be from Thailand." A VOA correspondent brought the American Sriracha sauce to a food market in Sriracha. Buyers and sellers there tasted the condiment, compared it to their local sauce, and shared their opinions. One woman who sells hot sauces said the American sauce is much saltier and spicier than the Thai sauce, which is more sweet and sour. She adds, however, that sriracha sauce has to be produced in Sriracha. Her adult daughter compared the Californian sauce to ketchup, a popular American condiment made from tomatoes, vinegar, and spices. She adds that the Californian sauce is a better match for the meat dishes preferred by foreigners, such as steaks. Thais, she explained, prefer a thinner sauce to eat with their dry noodle dishes. Both are good, she adds, but the American kind is too hot. But there is one thing food-loving people in the Thai city of Sriracha agree on. The foreign sauce, widely known among Americans as the rooster sauce, is making its own way in the food world. I'm Ana Mateo.
Oh yeah, hoi fong sriracha, oh yes siree. It's made in America, land of the free. Though it may look peculiar, don't let the bottle fool ya. It's hoi fong sriracha, the American garlic chili pepper sauce.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.